A legal education means you will learn to speak in a new language. You will be taught to achieve insight into the world around you and to sharply question what you know.
You can't handle the truth!
What are you doing, detective? What are you doing talking to my client without me present? You sneaky Pete.
Lose! I don't lose! I win! I win! I'm a lawyer! That's my job! That's what I do!
Okay, everybody, this is episode 66 of the Comedians at Law podcast. This is Alex Barnett. I'm joined in the booth this week by Matt Ritter.
Goodbye, 2013.
Exactly so. That's right. This is our final podcast episode of 2013. We got a special episode ahead, and we're planning to count down some top legal stories, among other things.
Yeah, it was a crazy year. I mean, I think I was just thinking about our year, you know, for Comedians in Law.
Mm-hmm.
I would say my favorite moment was us shooting the commercial at that office.
Oh, that was fun. That was fun.
Yeah, so I don't know if anyone has, our fans have checked out that video, but we did a fake law firm ad that I thought was really fun to shoot, and it came out really well.
Which you really enjoyed because you wrote it, so.
No, well, also I thought Julie's kid was so cute in it, too.
That's true. So, no, that really turned out well. So if people haven't seen that, if they go to our homepage, comediansatlaw.com, they can see that pull up right away, or our YouTube channel.
What was your favorite Comedians at Law moment of 2013?
My favorite Comedians at Law story. Well, there were ups and downs. I think that was definitely amongst the highlights. Although I'll tell you, and it's really going back to the very beginning of the year. We had our Vanderbilt gig this past year, January 2013, and that was great.
That was a killer gig, and you love that because you crushed.
Well, I did do well, but I think everybody who performed that day did.
Oh, yeah, of course. And we're going back there.
Yeah.
And, we're heading back in 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's partly why I'm thinking about it is because I know you're going back there, and I remember the gig was just exceptional. So.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's going to be really, really fun. I'm looking forward to that. That's January 17th.
Right. So for people just tuning in, this is our countdown end of the year podcast episode. If we're going to be performing at a couple of one last holiday party, and then in January we've got a couple of big things. Matt, as you heard, is going to be at Vanderbilt Law School with Kevin Israel. I'll be performing for the Augusta Bar Association, and then Matt and Matt Storrs and I think John V. Goldstein will be out in Arizona performing at a couple of gigs out in the Phoenix and Tempe areas, I believe.
Yeah, we'd love to see some of our Arizona fans. We'll be at Phoenix at Stand Up Live on the 29th and Tempe Improv on the 30th. And then you guys also have a Jersey gig, right, at Crossroads.
Oh, that's right. I almost forgot. I'm sorry. Kevin and Joan Weisblatt will be at Crossroads in New Jersey on January 16th. So that's a great gig. Very
busy
exciting.
Calendar.
Yeah, we got a full January calendar, and our February is starting to book up. So if people are looking to book us, please reach out to us, info@comediansatlaw.com. Or on Twitter @ComediansAtLaw. But Matt, we've got a really exciting episode, so let's get right into it. We've got a couple of really cool news stories and a couple of...
All right, let's do it. Yeah. Let's jump into the news.
Since when has the paragon of investigative journalism allowed lawyers to determine the news content?
Yeah, so this first story... For those of you who follow the podcast religiously, you know that last week Kevin, in his segment Kevin versus the Internet, discussed Duck Dynasty and the recent news about them. And so Matt, who was following the story even before Kevin, is still following it and came up with this news story about what's going on now down in Alabama.
Well, you know, this story keeps on going, and it's funny because an Alabama state senator, Jerry Fielding, is planning on introducing a resolution lauding Robertson as a hero for his, anti-homosexual beliefs.
Out of Alabama, who would imagine, right?
Yeah, who would have ever guessed that Alabama would want to put up a plaque to the guy? And he wants to make a resolution that, he's done so much positive, his viewpoints have done so much good work, so much of God's work. That they should have a, probably Phil Robertson Day, I think.
Yeah, so it's...
But the funny thing is the story just kept going today, and you may not like how it was resolved.
Tell me how it was resolved.
They're putting the show back on the air, and his suspension's been lifted. So for those of you who were listening last week, Alex and I made a little side bet. Do you remember what you said you would do if the show got, if they lifted his suspension and they kept shooting?
I can't remember, but I'm sure you do, so.
Oh, I do.
Yeah.
We said Alex Barnett was going to grow out a Robertson Family Duck Dynasty-type beard.
A ZZ Topper. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you heard it here first, folks. Comedians of Law is going to have its own dynasty.
How do you think Ivan's going to feel, your son, about the long beard?
He'll probably love it. He'll be able to pull on it and drag me around by it. But wow, I can't believe they succumbed to the almighty dollar. And
the almighty dollar and, you know, the pressures of, the religious groups, I think.
I guess so. So Alabama is leading the charge and the religious groups in getting Phil Robertson back on the air. Wow. Interesting.
It's amazing the sort of counter strikes that always happen in these things. You remember, this was a 2013 story that it just hit me too. The Chick-fil-A. Remember the Chick-fil-A saga?
Yes.
Chick-fil-A owner, you know, said he didn't want gay people eating in his restaurant, I think. And then they boycotted. But then when the religious groups all just showed up in full force to double their amount of chicken intake.
Yeah,
triple it maybe.
Yeah, so there you go. You're right. It's like strike and counter strike, sort of insurgency and counterinsurgency in the terrorism,
in the culture wars
of religious politics. Yeah,
big culture wars. So yeah, I mean, you know, we'll see. Some people are speculating that the whole thing was a publicity stunt.
Oh, sort of like a Kardashian wedding.
Yeah, like a perfect PR stunt, and the new season is airing the 15th. So, what better way to time it than with some, you know, homophobic remarks to get the people excited, to rally the troops.
I tell you, that would be the next big thing, right? Like, what's her face? Kim Kardashian marries Phil Robertson and has another child.
I could see that being the next big show, right? I mean, we have to merge the clans, right? That's really all that's left, merging the Kardashians and the Robertsons.
Right, the Kardashian Duck Dynasty.
Yeah, I like that. They're gonna make perfumes that smell like duck poo or something.
Or guys who hang out in duck blinds.
Yeah, I would like to see the Kanye West hanging out with the Duck Dynasty guys. Yeah, that would go down.
Right, right. Oh, wow.
You know,
interesting. Interesting story. Amazing. Well, look, we have a big, big thing ahead of us, so let's get into that. What Matt and I wanted to do for everybody who's been religiously following along with us, no pun intended, is to count down some major legal news stories for 2013. And there's some biggies. There's some real biggies. And we've got a list of about eight that the ABA Journal and some other places have identified as big ones. Matt, what do you think of this list, by the way?
I think they're missing a few things. I'll add an addendum to it as we go through it.
Okay. All right. Well, so the first one they've identified is that is the Edward Snowden NSA surveillance story. Now, personally, I'm married. I got nothing to hide. We don't do anything exciting except like wake up early and make pancakes. So I don't really mind the NSA bugging my emails and my phone calls. They're gonna fall asleep. But I could see where a single person like yourself might care.
I'm in a relationship, you know, a very healthy relationship, but I'm still a sick human being. So being a sicko, you know, I don't want them checking out my computer or anything that I do, actually, to be honest with you.
That's right. So actually, I mean, this is a pretty big story. I mean, now it's had offshoots where the guys from like Google and Facebook are going before Congress to testify about how they don't want this to continue, and they have their own concerns about the privacy of their users, which I think is sort of crocodile tears. But it is a major, and it's had repercussions across the world, of course, because you know, like the U.S. was bugging Angela Merkel's phone.
Yeah, I mean that was really a big blow. You know, we've had many big blows to diplomacy, but that's a sort of, you never want that one out of the bag. That you're spying on your allies.
Right. So, I mean, for all those young lawyers and graduating law students out there who are looking for jobs, definitely privacy law and First Amendment stuff is going to be at the top of the heap coming into the new year.
I think that's right. I also want to know, is this guy Snowden still at the Russian airport in Moscow? He's basically in that Tom Hanks movie, Terminal, right?
I was going to say, right, he's living like Tom Hanks. He's, like, doing construction. He's building newfangled things at the
He must
Terminal.
Desperately await every week the new People magazine.
Yes. I think that's right.
To arrive in the airport. But he must be sick of Starbucks and Oban Pen.
That's right.
Unless they have something different in Moscow.
Right,
but
or orange
that airport
juice for
$12
food, a liter or something or whatever.
I picture him just being that lonely guy, you know, at the airport bar that's always trying to, like, talk to people as they come and go. Hey, where are you headed? Moscow? Where are you headed? I can't go anywhere. I'm stuck here because I'm
Right.
I've been granted a very temporary asylum in this right. very small space.
Stanley Tucci.
What if he is? What if he is kind of? What if he's stuck at like Ruby Tuesdays? Would that be worse? Would that be worse than just going to jail?
Yes. Ultimately, yes. Ultimately, I
mean,
yes.
Yeah. I mean, just to be stuck at Ruby Tuesdays and just have to have the same conversations with people coming and going every day for,
well, that would be
for
like,
how long?
Right, that would be like start, right? Like no exit. It would be existential hell.
Yeah, I think so. But he's in existential hell. He makes the top of our list. The next one is gay marriage had a big year, a good year for Adam and Steve, as they say.
That's right. It was a good year. I don't know how many states now. Oh, it looks like New Mexico was the latest, right? The 17th state.
Yeah, you don't want to be the last one. I'm going to guess it's going to be Alabama, but you don't want to be last.
It could be Alabama. I think there'll be a race to the bottom between like Alabama, Mississippi, possibly one of the Dakotas. Yeah, but
you right. think they're just going to play a game of like holding out and like,
well, I think
to see who gets to be the last.
Yeah, yeah, one of them will be last. One of them will be yeah. last, and Phil Robertson will be waiting there.
Yeah. He'll actually have to. A&E is going to do a gay marriage episode where he ends up, you know, coming around on it, I think.
Right. But now what's going to happen, of course, and you're in Hollywood, so you're our resident Hollywood expert, there's going to be a raft, a spate of reality TV shows about gay marriages. There has to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I already have my pitch ready.
Do you?
Yeah, it's about gay divorce.
Oh, I see it coming. I think there's going to be gay divorce shows. There's going to be gay, you know, marriage counseling shows. There's going to be gay, you know, second home shows. All this.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
There's going to be the house husbands of.
But in all seriousness, I mean, I think it was pretty much, you know, one of the most positive steps our society took this year, the U.S.
Yes, other than booking us for shows. But yes, I think that's right.
Yeah, I mean, it comes distant, you know, needless to say, booking comedians in law is a great step for mankind.
Right.
But, you know, I'm happy about this. I'm glad to see that, you know, this whole idea of trying to, you know, enforce a policy where two people who love each other can't have the same rights as everybody else is finally, you know, going the way of any other stupid laws that we've had on the books.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. But it was the Supreme Court was busy. It wasn't just doing this. It wasn't just ruling on gay marriage. It was also, as we all know, ruling on the challenges to Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. And as people recall or know, because they read the newspaper from time to time, the Supreme Court held that the individual mandate was actually constitutional. They said it was not an improper use of the Commerce Clause, but it was a constitutional tax, and which was an interesting.
It was a very, very nuanced, some would say BS argument. But regardless, I mean, you know, I still don't know how I feel about it. I tried to sign up for California Covered Care 3 times, and I couldn't get through.
Oh, really? You're having trouble with the website?
Yeah.
Well, I hear you. I think that ultimately, you know, it's the legislation is a good thing because something had to be done to bend, as they say, bend the cost curve of healthcare in this country. Personally, I feel like the president kind of copped out a little bit early on. I think he should have held out for the public option. That's my personal feeling. That's not necessarily the feelings of the group, Comedians of Law, or anyone else besides me. But I think overall it was good. It was just interesting to see Chief Justice Roberts, I should say, really kind of contort himself into a pretzel to find this thing constitutional. And one wonders why he did it, and no one will ever know, I guess.
Unless the NSA is tapping his phones.
That's right.
But, you know, the other thing I was going to say is, you know, this is just the thing that drives me crazy is, you know, we're always so averse to changing the laws, and we always are coming up with reasons for why something won't work. And then, you know, we pass the Obamacare, Affordable Care Act, and the second there's some sort of internet glitch, everybody's ready to be like, see, I told you it was a failure.
Right.
And it's like, how about we just give it a year?
Right. Well, obviously, I mean, so much of that is politically driven, and we won't get into the politics of it necessarily, but you're right. I mean, I think Washington has become so polarized and so politicized that nobody will get on board for something promulgated by the other side, no matter how, you know, non-controversial or controversial it is, obviously. But you're right. I mean, why isn't everyone pulling together behind this as if it were a national effort?
Yeah, I mean, let's all. I mean, it's a law that passed. But let's all just try to make it work, and then let's see what happens. You know, call me in 2015. Tell me it was a disaster.
Right, right. Moving along. I mean, but then we have the flip side, which is the Supreme Court came in and really kind of kneecapped the Voting Rights Act in a way.
This was a very interesting one, you know, because. It's, you know, the Voting Rights Act got passed at a very hot, you know, hot time in the U.S. There was, you know, rampant discrimination. And I guess the justices seem to think that that's not a problem anymore.
Right. Of course, the people who seem to think it's not a problem are overwhelmingly white and
yeah.
conservative politically and have never dealt with or encountered racism of the kind that the Voting Rights Act was aimed at preventing or stopping. So it's always interesting to see privileged white people telling black people or other minority people, such as Hispanics, why their lives are fine and they should stop complaining, you know, which is essentially what's being said here. I think it's a disgrace, frankly, and that's not necessarily because my wife is black and my son is biracial. I think it's just as a person who has a conscience – it's disgraceful that anybody would say that the Voting Rights Act is not needed when we see efforts constantly about having voter anti-fraud drives in these in the elections as if there's rampant fraud, and there isn't. So
yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing, right? It's more anecdotal than it is factual because they've done studies.
That's right.
And we're talking about, you know, maybe a couple of hundred cases nationwide.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
You know, versus, you know, restricting and restraining the rights to the vote, you know, in the hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, I mean, look, you're in Hollywood. You're in the entertainment business constantly. I mean, you've been involved in television. I would venture to say, and you could confirm or deny this if, based on your experience, but that there's probably greater racism and discrimination in television based on age and race than there is in voting.
Well, you know, that's interesting. You read a lot of there's a website called Deadline, and you always read about, you know, who's selling projects and what is the racial breakdown of television this year after year, or what is the diversity amongst men and women, and it's really not changing so quickly.
Right. Okay. So there you have it. I mean, in other words, entertainment, which is populated by people who typically lean liberal.
You know, and you know what's interesting? I think there's an active racism and then there's a passive racism.
Okay. Well, tell the listeners what you mean by that.
Well, I think I don't know that it's so much intentional. I think it's more inaction that sort of propagates a system that is, you know, inherently discriminatory. It's like people keep hiring their buddies and their buddies are white. And then their buddies keep hiring more people that are white guys.
Right. Which would confirm,
you know,
Spike Lee's
theories. It's not so much that there's a formal process of racism is what I'm
right.
saying.
Basically, you're confirming Spike Lee's greatest fears, his conspiracy theories, which is that, in fact, white people like people who look like them and black people do too. But there were more white people to start in Hollywood. So
yeah, I mean, look, I think to be honest, I think everybody has a piece of that in them that they if they don't actively – you know, take a self-aware a viewpoint about themselves and, you know, the circles they associate with personally and professionally, it's a difficult thing to change.
Right.
Everybody has to make an effort and say, hey, well, you know, and it goes back to this voting rights thing. You know, white people have to say in North Carolina and Texas or wherever, take an honest assessment of what's going on and say, oh, you know, is this really – has this really, you know, has everything evened out now to the point where we really don't need these laws?
Right, No, I agree with you. I think that's absolutely right. And I think it's an excellent point. Probably one that people need to think about a lot more.
Yeah. I thought, you know, there was a funny, one of the funnier and unanticipated consequences of Texas rejiggering their laws is that women that are married were having all kinds of problems because it had to be your legal name as of that date.
Right.
And there were a lot of women whose name changed, so it's kind of a silly little offshoot of that.
No, that's a good point. That's an excellent point.
Anyway, yeah, I think the takeaway from that is, I think the Supreme Court, should be pretty careful about overturning laws that are specifically passed to protect people that need protection.
Exactly. Protected class. I mean, that's law school 101. Okay, now let's talk about gun rights, always a hot-button topic. Legislation, there was in the aftermath of the Newtown shooting, people were up in arms about how we finally needed to do something to ban automatic weapons and ban, 100-round magazines. And yet the NRA, as extreme as they seemed at the time, at the end of the day, they got their way. Nothing was done. You know, there was a bill introduced, and it just got shot down, no pun intended, and that was the end of that. And then there have been shootings since, and nothing's happened. And in fact, as the article points out incidentally, that, George Zimmerman of Trayvon Martin fame was acquitted of murder. There's a handgun death where it screams for some kind of, law enforcement activity, and nothing was done. So,
I mean, you know where I stand. I'm staunchly anti-gun, and I've been screaming it, since a long time ago, since law school. I think this was the year that at least guns really became a national conversation for the first time in a long time, for bad reasons. But at the very least, I think we're having a lot more conversations than we were having in the past about why anyone would possibly need an assault weapon ever. For any reason,
yeah, but
let alone 30 or 40 that you
right.
could have access to.
But here's the thing. I mean, and this hit me particularly hard because it was a school, and I have a son, and I don't know what else has to happen besides some lunatic walking into a grade school and opening up and mowing down a bunch of innocent little kids for the country to rally around the point that we have to first of all get a better control of. Weaponry of arms, regulate ammunition, background checks, have better healthcare for mentally ill people.
But to me, I take a much more harder line stance. I think that the problem with that debate is you're already conceding so much when you say mental health, this and that. There's so many gun shootings that are completely unrelated to people with mental health issues. There's children who get access to their parents' guns and shoot somebody in their household. There's teenagers shooting each other. There's all kinds of domestic disputes.
Well, don't get me wrong. I mean, I think the Constitution does not allow for the right to bear arms. I mean, I think that's
I agree with you. I agree with that stance. Once that got overruled in a case a couple of years ago, the name is escaping me.
Heller versus D.C.
Heller. That's right. Heller. Once Heller basically said, that was just a comma that was there.
It was 1750 when we lived in the woods. Yeah. We had the British ruling over us. We needed a militia.
The bottom line is, we have a sort of dialogue that we've started. What are we going to do with it in 2014? I mean, you now have a situation where you've got these 3D printers where you can even make guns that don't have metal. They just were passing these regulations on guns, and they didn't include something on these 3D printer guns
that don't have to have
metal on.
That's right. That's exactly right. It was right out of that movie with Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, I mean, completely. I think part of it has to tie into another issue that isn't on this list, which is campaign finance reform. The only way for us to have any real change is to not have politicians be in the pockets of, multi-billion-dollar super PACs,
I think you're right. I think you're right. And I don't know what there is much more to say about it other than the fact that politicians of both parties should really should really stand up and oppose guns.
You know what I would like, though, to be fair, and, you know, this is just Alex and I's personal opinions, not the opinion of the group. I would love to have a pro-gun advocate come on for a healthy and spirited debate on the Communities of Law podcast in 2014. Yeah,
I would like that, too. All right, well, let's move on to something that might be nearer and dearer to some of our listeners. The law school enrollment issues.
Finally.
Yeah.
Finally. Finally, heading in the right direction.
Well, why don't you tell the listeners what's happening here?
Well, big news in the law school front is enrollment's finally down. It took us, you know, we've been ranting about telling law students, you know, they should probably not go to law school. We've been saying that for 3-4 years now. It turns out people are finally listening to the Committee of the Law.
Well,
I think I would take some credit for that.
Right, but here's the thing. It's like, it's one thing if you're somebody's in high school now or they've been working and they've been thinking about going to law school. The people who are really victimized are the ones who had decided to go to law and were already in. We're like a first year or second year or in halfway to the third year and found out that there was no there.
Yeah, I would call them the lost generation.
That's right. I mean,
you know, I always say to them, just, you know, you just need to memorize these two words, document review.
God. But you know what's so crazy is you're almost probably exactly right. I
think that's, you know, and you know what's funny is, you know, of these schools, a lot of schools were pleading poverty, a lot of law schools, but some of these lower tier schools were expanding their pool of students.
Right, but it's like you put your finger on something that's so important here, which is that, look, if you went to a top 10 law school, chances are you're going to do okay, probably, although you'll probably have a massive amount of debt. But if you went to a school that's beyond number 20, down to like 127. If you didn't finish in the very top of your class, or have political connections through family or whatever, you who knows what your legal career is going to look like?
Yeah, I mean, I think unless you speak fluent Chinese, even your doctor view prospects are grim.
That's right. That's right. So I just feel like that. Those are the people who really got hosed by the overbuilding of law schools. And
at this point, you should just try and join those class actions. I think that's probably your best move.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, your best move is literally suing your law school. That's probably your best chance at making a decent paycheck.
I think you're right.
Being a named plaintiff against one of these lower tier schools for their post-graduation numbers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though a couple of those suits got shot down, I think it's still better than trying to get a job in this economy.
Yeah. Or you could go.
Or you know, I would suggest for some law students, I don't know, you know, maybe just put a rat in your sandwich somewhere and try and get some money that
way. That,
or
I was going to say something a little slightly less Machiavellian is maybe go abroad to one of these outsourcing countries like India or Singapore, you know, Vietnam, and open a call center. Or a legal document review center where you can be the manager of the place.
Yeah, like that show Outsourced. I think that's probably a good idea.
Right. I think that's
we're
right.
Just full of good ideas for law students today.
Not for ourselves, but for them. All
yeah.
Right. So the next story after that is one that happened more recently. The Republicans have been filibustering President Obama's judicial nominees for and executive branch appointments for years, and finally the Senate Democrats, who have the majority, decided to act, and they changed the filibuster rules with respect to certain presidential appointments. Not all, but certain ones.
That they could, for judicial appointments, yeah.
Exactly, so they could clear the logjam a little bit. And here's my question to you. What do you think? I mean, is this going to be like Pandora's box?
Of the quote-unquote nuclear option? It's very tough to see a scenario where this doesn't come back to bite them in the butt.
Well, that was the big fear. I mean, that was why they didn't do it for so long, is that the fear was that the Republicans would take the majority, and then the Democrats would just be getting crushed and clobbered.
Yeah. But what were the options, really? I mean, if you can't get anything done, at some point, you're stalled out. You've got to go big or go home.
There you go. That's the Hollywood view. I mean,
go big or go home. You know, look, and I'm sure Obama's thrilled because he's out in 2 years and his judicial nominees could have long-lasting consequences and help build his legacy in some ways after he's gone.
Yeah. I'm sure that's right. And he was.
You know what I mean? And these are the people that are often in the pool for Supreme Court nominations. So, you know, I think there's definitely something to be said about the importance of being able to, you know, put those in there. And that's, you know, that's part of a presidential stamp, getting to put your judicial nominees in place.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think that's an excellent point. I think people forget about that. But he probably, as a result of that, probably leaned on the Senate Democrats pretty hard to get this done. And they went ahead and did it. And, you know, it remains to be seen how this is going to play out. I mean, obviously now it's working in the Democrats' favor. But who knows what will happen, you know, in the next election cycle after that, or if the Republicans ever take over the majority.
The Republicans are going to go nuclear.
That's right. That's right. They'll go nuclear or nuclear.
Yes.
All right. The final story of the top eight that we found was the 50th anniversary of Gideon versus Wainwright, which was actually made into a really great movie with Henry Fonda many years ago, called Gideon's Trumpet. But this was the case decided many years ago, 50 years ago specifically, saying that all defendants had the right to counsel, which is obviously a pretty big deal because it's now been made famous on TV in the Miranda rights, where everyone gets rid of their rights about the right to counsel. Have you ever had the occasion to avail yourself of publicly provided counsel?
I never have, thankfully. But I will say this, you know, a federal judge in Washington found that a couple of cities have basically systematically violated rights of indigents by slashing budgets of their defender's office to the point where you're not really getting adequate representation. I think a perfect example of this was a woman who, subsequent to the George Zimmerman Trayvon Martin incident, defended herself against her abusive husband. She was black. And she, you know, shot her gun in the air and not at him, but shot it in the air because she feared for her life and had a terrible public defender because within, I believe it was something like 20 minutes, the jury had convicted her and sent her away for 20 years.
Wow. Well, there you go.
Thankfully, right. On appeal, I think they remanded the case. So they reversed and remanded the case.
No, but it goes to a bigger point. I mean, your point is well founded, which is that, you know, nowadays, I mean, always probably, but nowadays even more so than ever, there's this huge income disparity between the haves and the have-nots, and so the have-nots have not. They get nothing. You know, they have this constitutional right to counsel, and yet they really don't. Effectively.
Yeah. And I also think this ties into, you know, there's this prison economy, and it ties into the racism issue that we're faced. So it's not necessarily all racism, but, you know, economics of the equation are as if you're poor, you know, and you commit any sort of infraction or maybe even not, you end up in a situation where you don't really have adequate defense and you get shipped off to jail. And there's an incentive in the judicial pool to put you away for a long time because states have deals with these giant prison corporations.
Yeah. Well, that's topic for a whole other podcast. That could be a whole podcast about that.
Absolutely. It just struck me that they're all kind of – everything that we're talking about is kind of tying in, you know, which kind of brings me to our – what I wanted to do with you is if you could change one law in 2014, what would it be?
Right. Well, it's interesting because we talked off air about this beforehand, and I was all set to come in and talk about how I thought Obamacare should be changed and public options should be introduced and – and on the table. But frankly, after we talked about guns, I think I'm more up in arms about that. I think that the best thing that could happen to this country in the short term would be if they pass meaningful legislation to ban or very, very much restrict handguns and assault rifles and mega magazines and people's access to the same. To me, that would be the best law to get passed in 2014.
Well, you kind of stole my thunder.
I'm sorry.
That would be one of the ones, but... You know, to me, my number two, and it runs very close behind, is campaign finance reform, overturn Citizen United. It's just egregious that corporations get all the rights of, you know, people with none of our problems. And I think it flows through to every issue that we're talking about. Every issue that we're talking about, we get resistance not from individuals but from, you know, corporations with, you know, billions behind them. And, you know, a lot of times it may not even be more than, 10% of the population in favor of something, you know, like gun restrictions, you know.
Yeah.
Yet the lobby for the NRA is powerful and has deep pockets and can fund a lot of important congressmen.
Yeah, I mean, that is a great point because – Right. I mean, what is behind any of this? All of it is money, right? I mean, whether it was Obamacare, where the you know Obama had to go out of his way to sort of placate the insurance industry and the AMA on the one hand to play along, much to the consternation of the Democrats and the liberal wing of the Democratic Party at the time. And because it's money, and as you say now, it's with the NRA, they're well funded. We didn't even talk about the oil and gas industry and fracking.
I'm giving them a pass this year for 2013. They didn't even reach the they didn't even make the list.
And then of
not
course,
that they, right. Not that I don't have a bone to pick, but our time is limited. They didn't even make it this year.
and to go back to the first story, which was Snowden and surveillance. I mean, like, I don't know how much outside money is driving that, but one wonders where is the deep pocket in that story.
Yeah, it's a very good question for our maybe our first podcast of 2014.
Exactly.
Oh, the last thing I wanted to say about top legal issues of the year was the hottest murderer of the year goes to Jodi Arias, hands down.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I mean, I don't know that there was a true competition,
murder.
But I think you're right.
Yeah. Should we turn it over to Kevin?
Yes, excellent. All right, folks, as you know, Kevin has a weekly segment where he takes on the internet or stories on the internet that drive him wild in between bench press sets. So here you go with Kevin versus the internet.
Hey, guys, welcome to another installment of Kevin versus the internet. I am Kevin Israel, and welcome to our New Year's extravaganza. We're covering the best of 2013 and looking forward to bigger and better things in 2014. As with all New Year's, we start to think about our resolutions, what we're going to do different and do better in the new year. I, for one, was never big on resolutions. I think most people never stick to them. I think we all know that guy in the gym who we see going at it hard in January and February, and then by April, he's nowhere to be found. But I think that I think they still can be useful, give you a direction, give you some ideas of what you should be doing, and maybe some goals to set for yourself. So I think I want to set out some resolutions for some celebrities that have been making headlines this year. I think I have a good list made up, so you can let me know what you think of the resolutions and maybe of your own resolutions. That you can tweet at me at KevinIsrael_NJ, or as always at ComediansAtLaw with the hashtag CalPod. But let's get started. Our first celebrity is Mr. Ben Affleck. Ben, as we all know, is going to be the next Batman, appearing in the next Superman movie. Ben's got pretty big boots to fill as he dons the cowl and mask. Christian Bale did a really great job as Batman. So I'm hoping for big things. Ben, I think you should resolve to be the best Batman ever. I think you can definitely beat out George Clooney's job, but Christian Bale is going to be tough to top. But give us your best performance. Give us a The Town Batman. Don't do a Geely Batman. So moving on, we have Miley Cyrus and Justin Bieber. Between the two of you, I think you can just walk into a dark hole somewhere and maybe spend 2014 in obscurity. I don't think we need to hear from you. Miley, if you want to go back to your Hannah Montana days, and Justin Bieber, if you just want to go away, I think that would be great. Phil Robertson of Duck Dynasty fame, Alex and Matt were talking about him earlier. I think Mr. Robertson and the whole Duck Dynasty clan should resolve to stick to just making duck calls. They made millions of dollars off of making the world's best duck call, and you should probably just stay with what you know. You're not the greatest spokesperson, and you should probably keep your opinions to yourself. Next, a big one, Kanye West. Kanye West actually announced his New Year's resolution publicly. He said he's going to keep quiet and not pick on anyone for the next 6 months. Kanye, I think you should up the ante and make that a full lifetime. You should probably just shut up forever. Although everything you say is great fodder for comedians, it really makes me question the value of the human race. To Kanye's bride, Miss Kim Kardashian, you should resolve to stop taking selfies and work more on keeping Kanye quiet. Moving on, we have President Obama. I think Mr. Obama should resolve to take up some web design. It seems that his current policies would probably do with a little assistance if he had a better grasp on computers and how websites work and the realities behind the internet. I think that would help you and maybe pull up your approval a little bit. God knows it could use it. And finally, to my favorite, Miss Kate Upton, the beautiful Miss Kate Upton. She's going to be in a few movies coming out this year. We've all seen her. If you haven't seen Kate Upton, I suggest you you Google Kate Upton, Cat Daddy. Trust me, it'll be worth your while. Kate Upton, I think you should resolve to call me or just tweet at me at KevinIsrael_NJ. I think you're single now. I can't really keep track. But if you are, you can tweet at me, and I'm sure we can work something out. I know you're looking up your game, and I'm here, and I'm willing. So that's it. That's my celebrity New Year's resolutions. As for my resolution, I don't know what it is. I'm going to resolve to keep making this segment better and keep my comedy career trucking forward. Why don't you guys tweet at me your New Year's resolutions? Again, you can tweet at KevinIsrael_NJ or Comedians at Law with the hashtag CalPod, and let me know what you're planning on for 2014. What do you hope, or what do you think some celebrity should resolve? So that's it for me, guys. Back to you, Matt and Alex.
Okay, another
nice way to finish the year strong for him.
He did. He knocked it out between military press and benching.
I heard him breathing heavily, I think.
All right, well, let's turn to our final segment, which is to break out the Twitter feed this final episode of the year and see what people are tweeting to us or what's going on our Twitter channel. As always, just a constellation of new followers.
Yeah, no, and these are the last people getting the shout-out for the year. You want to give them the shout-out?
Sure. Well, I'll give the most recent ones are Neil Paris, let's see. Some of these people are retweeting us. I'm sorry. Drunk at Law School. Interesting. Someone whose name I can't pronounce. It looks like they must be from Croatia or Albania. Hamid Nisanor Alar, Birkin Tomac, Kenneth Minnesinger.
Yeah, it looks like a California law firm. That's nice.
Yeah, Buck Black, who looks like he's a licensed social worker, Marita Coxwell, and Glenn Ellen. So, I mean, those are
what's MLA law? That's something.
Let's see. Oh, did I miss one?
Yeah, MLA law.
Oh, let's see. MLaw.
MLA law. Yeah, all right. Well, nice. Very nice. Well, the 23rd also is after our last podcast, so all those people should get a shout out.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You want to do those?
Yeah, so we have Michelle, we've got Zach, we've got Nicole, she looks like she's a Texas State alum law student, we've got Basir Arashid, looks like he's a law student also, that's nice, nice to see we're getting some law student love, Russell Rompang, might also be a law student, let's see, who else we got here? And everybody else we already gave a shout-out to, I believe.
Right. And our apologies, by the way, to everybody for mispronouncing, butchering their names.
Yeah, we'll get better at that 2014. That's my 2014 resolution. What's your Comedians at Law resolution for 2014 before we leave?
Oh, I want us – my resolution is we will be booked for 100 gigs by June 30th.
My resolution is that we will have a sponsor for our podcast.
Oh, I like that. I like that. So if somebody's out there who wants to book us for 99 gigs in a row, hit us up on Twitter. Or if, you, of course, you want to sponsor this podcast, also hit us up on Twitter at Comedians at Law or email us at info@ComediansAtLaw.com. Matt, will you have any big New Year's plans? Are you performing?
No, I'm actually – I spend it on my girlfriend has a farm in New Jersey that she grew up at. So we just really low-key.
Nice.
With the horses.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. How about yourself?
I will be at home watching some form of Sesame Street video.
Very nice.
Yes.
Yeah, very nice. Well, Happy New Year to all our listeners. Happy New Year to you. And we'll see you all in 2014.
Absolutely.